Three scenarios, one thing in common. Scenario one, a daughter and her aging father. And it's a struggle. They've been close a long time, but he's having some memory issues. He's not doing as well as he once had. He loves his independence. He loves to drive his car. And she has this conversation with him one evening, and it's really difficult. And she says it lovingly and with gentleness, "Dad, I think you're actually putting other people at risk when you go out driving at night." And it's hard, and he's been experiencing some personality changes, and he says, "How can you do this to me?" Scenario two, a mother and her teenage daughter. The mother is 38, the daughter is 17, and they've been close, and they go to church together, and they try to do their devotions together, but it's those teen years, and they've been having more and more tension recently, and so the mother thinks that the daughter is making more careless decisions, and the daughter thinks the mom is turning into like a helicopter parent, and so they're arguing more than they would like. Anyway, it wasn't a good day, and the mom is in the corner store, and she sees a fridge magnet that she thinks would be good to get, and she gets it, and she puts it on the fridge at home for everyone to see. Hey, teenagers, move out while you still know everything. Did not go over well with the daughter. Scenario three, a young man is new to the Christian faith. He's excited. He's got that initial passion and zeal, and he's reading his Bible and going to church, and he's learning what it means to be a follower of Jesus. Gets to Exodus 20 and the Ten Commandments, and he struggles, and he makes an appointment with the pastor at the church that he's been worshiping at. He says, "We need to talk," and it comes in, "What's on your mind?" And he says, "How am I supposed to honor my parents when they abused me as a child?" Three scenarios, one thing in common, and the thing that those things have in common is that there are people trying to follow the fifth command to honor your father and your mother when life gets difficult and when life gets very complicated. And so this is a part of our series called The Royal Family Code. It's a journey through the Ten Commandments. We're about halfway through, and one of the things we've been emphasizing is that God reveals himself to us as a king, savior, and father. King, savior, and father. And that king title is so very, very important because we do belong to royalty. And so we are learning about how to live in a way that reflects that royal pedigree. And so today we arrive at commandment number five, to honor your father and your mother that your days may be long in the land that the Lord your God is giving you. And one of the things we've been discovering as we go through the commands is that there's more than what first meets the eye in these commandments. There's a picture that's been going around online. Here it is. It's a lion. It looks like the lion is eating a lion cub or some other animal. You're like, whoa, that's kind of crazy. But then you see the other half of the picture, and it's that same situation from a different perspective, and you realize, wait a second, a little cub isn't being eaten. It's being lovingly cared for and carried by the mother. And it's simply a matter of perspective, looking at things from a different angle. And that's what we're discovering as we go through the series on the Ten Commandments, right? There's more than what first meets the eye. Doing a bit of research, looking at context, looking at things from a bit of a different angle, and we see more of what is happening. We found that especially with Commandment 1, you shall have no other gods before me. With Commandment 3, you shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. And we are definitely going to find that out today with the command to honor your father and your mother. But before we get into the text, I just want to acknowledge what I think is an elephant in the room on a subject like this, which is that we belong to a society which in many ways is going the wrong direction. And instead of honoring and respecting those who have gone on before, we do the opposite. This is an oversimplification, but to many people, old equals bad, young equals good. And friends, it should not be so. And when we start to adopt this kind of thinking, it is a stain on our culture and on our attitudes. Let me tell you a few things about what I mean. We worship youth culture. We idolize, and I don't use that word lightly, we idolize teenage singers and actors. We spend billions collectively on looking young. We write and dream about a fountain of youth. When I was in high school, I worked at a golf course, and I would have this frequently, washing clubs and golfy, greens fees and everything else. So often, people would come up to me and say, "Oh, you're in high school, right? Enjoy these. This is the best time of your life." And I was liking, with this chemistry I don't understand and these zits, this is the best? Like, that's depressing. If this is the best, and they meant it, and oftentimes people would say this. So you mean after I graduate from high school, everything is downhill, but isn't that kind of a comment about how we think about so much in life? We tend to dismiss older people and older ideas. Oh, they're so traditional, which is a quaint way of saying backward and stupid. Instead of appreciating people who have gained experience and wisdom, quite often through their literal own blood, sweat, and tears, we dismiss. And brothers and sisters, it should not be so. William earlier mentioned C.S. Lewis, the great literary critic and author. He talks about chronological snobbery. In Surprised by Joy, he writes, "This is the uncritical acceptance of the intellectual climate, common to our own age, and the assumption that whatever has gone out of date is on that account discredited." Chronological snobbery. So the idea that we are, you know, because something is in the here and now, it is good, but anything that is old is bad and out of date. Now, Jennifer Senior has a book about parenting. The title of this parenting book is All Joy and No Fun. Talk about an interesting title. You can borrow it if you want. All Joy and No Fun, and she writes, "Attitudes shifted after World War II about the role of children in the home. Children stopped contributing to the family economy. Quote, children stopped working and parents worked twice as hard. Children went from being our employees to our bosses." Now, it's an oversimplification, but it is a change in attitude. Now, some of the changes in attitudes towards youth and young people are very good. The kingdom belongs to such as these. We value, and so often children have not had a good voice and a good place in the communities that they're involved in and certainly in their families. But what has happened is the pendulum has sometimes swung too far. So we are doing a couple of things specifically. We are recognizing that honoring those who have gone before is an increasingly countercultural activity. And second, we are restoring healthy balance to where it should be. It's interesting, I came across this fact. The word ignorant, the word origin of ignorant, means on your own. The idea is sometimes we are being ignorant if we are operating on our own from the wisdom of the past, if we are operating on our own without the input and experience of other people who have walked the path before us. May it not be so with us. So what are we going to do is we're going to go through the text. We're going to go through Exodus 20 verses 1 to 12. And that is the first five commandments. I'm not going to explain anything about the first four because we've been doing that Sunday by Sunday. And if you've missed one of those, I encourage you to go back to the church website or my website and you get caught up. And then we're going to arrive at the fifth commandment and we are going to unpack that. We're going to bring in a few other passages to help provide clarity. And then we're going to look at some specific applications to our lives today. So let's open the beautiful, inspired Word of God, open the flesh of the text, and let's go through Exodus 20. "And God spoke all these words, saying, I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. Commandment one is, you shall have no other gods before me. Commandment two, you shall not make for yourself a carved image or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down to them or serve them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me, but showing steadfast love to thousands of those who love me and keep my commandments. Commandment three, you shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain, for the Lord will not hold him guiltless who takes his name in vain. Commandment four, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work. You, your son, your daughter, your male servant, your female servant, or your livestock, or the sojourner who is within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heaven, the earth, the sea, and all that is in them, and rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. Commandment five today, honor your father and your mother, that your days may be long in the land that the Lord your God is giving you." This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to put up the fifth command. Honor your father and your mother that your days may be long in the land that the Lord your God is giving you. And we're going to look at it section by section. And what I want to first say is that you can't miss that this is actually first addressed to adults, right? So the people have been rescued out of slavery in Egypt. The Hebrews are there. And they're gathered at the base of Mount Sinai. They'll be there roughly for a year before they start to move into Canaan, into the promised land. And they're there, and they're gathered at the base of the mountain, and God is speaking to the people through Moses. And mothers and fathers are gathered. This is first to them. And the reason it's good to say that and to highlight that is because quite often this is used kind of as a way to chastise children by parents. Hey, you're supposed to listen to me. Because, you know, honor your parents, right? And it's true, it applies to children, but I think original context, it's first actually being addressed to adults as they think about their own parents. So having said that, I want to highlight it's the only command with a promise. So you'll notice that's the section that is underlined, that your days, so that, this is the promise, so that your days may be long in the land that the Lord your God is giving you. So the land is Canaan, right? They're headed in that direction. And what we need to note is this is a general principle, not just to individuals, but to the nation as a whole. Hey, you do this collectively, and it will go well for you. Terence Fretheim, the scholar, says, if the commandment is obeyed, life will go better for one, generally speaking. But also, there's something bigger at play. Why? Because it's the fundamental building block of society. Parents and children, the basic family unit, this is the God-ordained fundamental building block of society. Quote, no interhuman relationship is so basic as that between children and parents. It is a fundamental order of creation. At no age do people cease to be children of parents. You know, maybe your parents are alive, maybe they're not. At no age do you cease to be children of parents. Now think of the time, okay? So they've come out of slavery in Egypt. They're wandering. Are there any hospitals? No. Is there 911? No. Are there PSWs? No. Are there doctors? No, no, no. The fundamental building block, the order of creation, are to care for and provide for one another. It's a matter of life and death. There's nothing else. So we need to acknowledge that. So not only is this good to honor parents in the here and now, but you're also setting an example for the children. So future generations will see, oh, this is how it is done because I've seen my parents do that to my grandparents. But we can't miss that this actually does have an impact on the well-being of the society and of the nation as a whole. And in fact, about 2,000 years later, after the time of Moses, we come to the time of Ezekiel. Ezekiel 22, 3,500 years. I got the dates mixed up. But Ezekiel 22, so Ezekiel is there and he's prophesying that there's going to be a foreign nation who's going to come in and they're going to destroy Jerusalem and the people are going to be exiled to a foreign land. Now, why? Now, there's a variety of reasons. There's sin, the rebellion. Listen to one of the reasons that is given for the destruction of the city and the exile of the people. It's because fathers and mothers were treated with contempt. And a punishment came upon the nation because fathers and mothers were treated with contempt. Okay, so with that, we're going to circle the word honor. What does it mean? Because by itself, it's kind of vague. Well, in Hebrew, it's the word chaved, which means to be heavy or weighty, therefore honored. So weighty, heavy, what do you mean? Well, it's not talking about physically, it's talking about emotionally. In relationships, there's a relational weight that's given to parents. We are to give them a relational weight and place and priority in our lives. Now, this is part of the reason why Jesus' words are very, very controversial. This was very important to people, honoring parents. Some rabbis put it right up there beside honoring God. That's how high they considered this. So let's consider some of the words of Jesus, because some of us are probably thinking, well, Jesus said some things that are making us confused at this moment. So in Luke 14, Jesus is gathering disciples around himself, and he is teaching what it means to follow him. Chapter 14, beginning at verse 25. Now great crowds accompanied him, Jesus, and he turned and said to them, if anyone comes to me and does not hate his own father and mother and wife and children and brothers and sisters, yes, even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. Whoever does not bear his own cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. Now, what in the world is going on? We're told in Hebrews 4 and elsewhere that Jesus doesn't sin. So what do you mean, hate father and mother? Don't we uphold the Ten Commandments? Well, we do, and Jesus taught that, and here's what's going on. So elsewhere, Jesus says that we need to keep the Ten Commandments, including honoring our parents. Luke 18, verse 20 is one of those places. We need to see that Jesus actually prioritizes and provides for his own mother in his own example. So we see this in John 19, while he's hanging on the cross, right? So he's about to die to this world, beginning at verse 26. When Jesus saw his mother and the disciple, remember he's on the cross here, saw his mother and the disciple whom he loved standing nearby, he said to his mother, "Woman, behold your son." And he said to the disciple, "Behold your mother." And from that hour, the disciple took her to his own home. So what we see here is that Jesus, knowing he's about to physically die, what he does is he points out to the apostle John, the beloved disciple with whom he walked and talked, and says, "Hey, take care of my mom. And John, treat her like your mother." And so he actually is providing for his own mother. So what do we make, therefore, of Jesus' comments about hating father and mother? Well, Jesus is employing a rabbinic tool called hyperbole, exaggeration for effect. And we see this from the example of Jesus. In other words, our loyalty and commitment to God should be so primary, it should be so at the top of the list that other human commitments, even honoring parents, will seem weak in comparison to putting God first. And so he's actually offering a corrective to those rabbis who had put honoring parents up there beside honoring God. So it's about priorities. Next thing we're going to circle is the word "and." Honor your father and your mother. Now, the reason this is important to point out, and it usually falls in the category of things we miss, is because in a society that I would call biblical patriarchy, it's expected that you'd honor your father. They actually go out of the way to say, honor your father and your mother. That would have been shocking to a lot of people at the time. Together, they are the ones who provide life. Okay, so from that, I'm going to prepare three words for you and put them up on the screen. Priority, respect, and care. So this, we're moving into application. How do we honor? Because by itself, it's kind of a vague word. What does it mean? Like today, people say, love your neighbor. What does that mean? It can be so vague unless we give some teeth to it. So I've highlighted three words that I'll explain that I think are rooted in the biblical example and teachings. Priority, respect, and care. And we start with priority. Give parents priority. It's related to that word, chaved, honor, weighty, social and relational weight in your life. It's related to the idea of authority. A parent has authority. Now think of when a child is small. A child is young. A parent is kind of like a small g god to them because they know everything. They give life. They tell them what they're doing in the day. They put food in the fridge. If in those early years the parent is not there and the kid is by themselves, the kid dies. Right? And so one of the ways a young child learns to respect the honor and give priority is to obey. And the Apostle Paul says that in Ephesians 6:1. Children, obey your parents as is fitting in the Lord. Now, as they grow, some of the nature of that relationship is going to change, especially as a child learns more and gains more responsibility. So the roles are going to shift over time. But if you think of a to-do list, you think, okay, there's things that I'm going to attend to first. Parents should be near the top. Now, before I move on to the second word, respect, because it builds on the idea of priority, this is how we show priority, I want to highlight two resources, and they're from the podcast. And so the first is called Honoring Your Parents, Tension in the Teen Years. Because as kids grow, that teenage period is when all of a sudden teens become more responsible, they start to know more, etc. And so as a part of my research, I came across a really helpful short article in something called the Reformation Heritage King James Study Bible, and right at the end, it's got all these little articles about a whole bunch of things about life, and the one on honoring parents was specifically focused on the teen years, and it's helpful not only for teens to hear, but parents of teens, so I thought it'd be great to reproduce it, so I reached out to the general editor of the Study Bible, Dr. Joel Beakey, said, "Hey, can we reproduce this in the church?" He said, "Gladly," and so you can listen to it, so it's live as of this morning on the podcast, so I encourage you to check that out. And the second is a podcast that is forthcoming. And it's related to the third scenario that I began with earlier. Here it is. Am I still supposed to honor my parents if they abused me as a child? And because as we go through a command like this, there's nuance that is required in the situation of pain and abuse. And so this is actually someone who came in and talked to me about this. And so I'll put this out there because everything I'm saying today is assuming all things are equal, right? But in a situation of abuse, a few other scriptures need to come in that provide nuance to that situation. So that's going to be coming out fairly shortly. Okay, so having said that, let's move on to the second application. Show parents respect. And again, what does that mean? I've highlighted some categories on the right that have to do with respecting father and mother. And the first is that parents are made in God's image. And we need to remember that. They, too, are made in the image of God. So Genesis 1:27 says, all people, regardless of background, all people are made in God's image. So think of that for a second. Our parents are made in the image of God, and so they, like other people, are to be given respect, and they have dignity. But God used, as a vessel, our parents as he was making us in our mother's womb in his image. Image of God uses parents as a vessel in the image. Here we are. And that is one of the reasons we show respect. Second, sacrifice. Parents make sacrifices, right? And no parent is perfect. I'm not perfect. Well, Laura and my mom are perfect, but other than that. No, they're also not perfect. They're also not perfect. But they do a pretty great job. No parent is perfect. However, parents, you know, all things being equal, most parents are making significant sacrifices for their children, and this is one of the reasons why we respect and honor them. Ronald Rollheiser, in a book called Domestic Monastery, I love it, he says, being a mother or a father stretches the heart, just as the womb is stretched in pregnancy. This is because among all loves, parently love is perhaps the one that most pulls your heart out of its self-love. Parenting reshapes the core of your being to help you love more like God loves. I love that idea of just as a womb stretches, so does a parent's heart stretch in love. And this might be biological, and sometimes people adopt children, and they stretch their core in the same way to show that love to someone that they have taken under their wing. And so there is this sacrificial love that we need to recognize our parents have done. Way before we knew anything, our parents made sacrifices, sometimes with their time, sometimes with their finances, wiping our backsides. When you're crying because you can't understand the algebra and they hug you. When you're 10 years old and you've got a high fever and you're vomiting in the toilet and they hold back your ponytail, like this is what we're talking about. And so we remember and we respect and we honor. The third category is their words. We listen to their words. We listen to what they have to say. Through blood, sweat, tears, wisdom, and experience, we listen to what they have to say. We might not always agree, but we respect and we listen. The fourth category is our words. We use words that are respectful and that honor our mothers and our fathers. The Bible has a lot to say about words and the power of words. Words are physical things. They make an impact and a change in the world. And the Bible talks about the tongue, the power of the tongue for good, for evil. Much is said against gossip. How much worse is gossip or negative talk if it is against the one who brought us into the world? And so, as James says in chapter 3 of his book, from the same mouth comes blessings and cursings. Brothers and sisters, this should not be. So we need to use words that bless. And finally, humility. So we are cultivating humility in ourselves when we are showing honor and respect towards our fathers and our mothers, because they are always our fathers and mothers. They knew us and were caring for us and doing things for us, as imperfect as they are. While we didn't know anything, we hadn't accomplished anything, we had nothing to give other than some giggles, and they cared for us. And so this is an exercise in humility. Thomas More is well known as the author of Utopia. That's where that comes. And if you go to a university philosophy class, you'll probably read it. He's also known because he was decapitated by King Henry VIII. That's a story for another day. But he rises to become the second most prominent person in England in the 1500s. He's the Lord High Chancellor of England. He's the first layperson to ever hold the position. And so as he walks into a room, people defer to him. They respect and honor him. People are, you know, bowing down to him, these sorts of things. But his own dad, John Moore, was still around when he rose to be Lord High Chancellor. And whenever John Moore, Thomas More's dad's, came into the room, Moore would turn to him and bow to him to show him deference. Because no matter how high Thomas More had climbed on the social ladder, his father was technically below him, but he was above him in authority and the respect that he was owed. I love that. No matter what, your parents are always your parents. Third, care. This is increasingly difficult, and I just want to acknowledge this. This has become increasingly difficult partly because people are living longer than ever before, at least in the modern period. Craig Evans says that in the lifetime of Jesus, lifespans were shorter, and then half of the population died before 30. Half, imagine that, half of the population died before 30, and that's in Jesus' time. So go back 1,500 years before that time to the time of Moses. That's a long time ago. Lifespans would have been different. And so we just need to acknowledge that reality. So at the start, that scenario that I told about the daughter and her dad, and he was driving and he probably shouldn't be anymore, how are you doing this to me? That is an acknowledgement of that reality. Not only are people living longer, but people geographically aren't in the same location as their kids as much as they used to be. In this country, on average, people move once every 5 years. Once every 5 years, and quite often they're moving out of town. They're moving to a different province sometimes. So then at a point when a parent needs some care, quite often the children are not around. And so some people are able to provide care for themselves, and that's wonderful, but some people aren't. And this is just a part of our reality. And so one of the ways that we provide care is to get other people to help, and that's okay. Maybe there's a level of care that's required that you need some sort of energy or expertise or caregiving that you simply can't provide. And so a part of your care that is legitimate is getting someone else to help. Maybe it's a personal support worker. Maybe it's a nursing home, whatever it happens to be. The child is responsible, but they're getting other people to help, and that's okay. That's a function of care. So for example, if I've got a child and they're struggling in a subject, I'm their parent, I'm responsible for their education. But it's like, I don't know how to do all that. It's okay to get a tutor to come in and help and get some extra work. That's okay, I'm still providing. And so this is one of the ways we provide care. We sometimes need to bring in outside support. So to recap, our situation is different from Moses' time. People are living longer. People are not living as close to family as they used to. Plus, we are in a culture that idolizes youth culture, and so we are engaging in against-the-grain activity as we should, because God's wisdom endures. We give parents priority, we show parents respect, and we care for parents. Let me end with this thought. Philip Yancey tells of a time when it was life-changing for him, and he visited Russia. And Russia, this is 1991, Russia had been through a lot, like a 70-year program where a lot of things were foisted on the people, the church was persecuted, and he said one of the things he noticed is that as he walked around the streets, grown adults were like hanging their heads feeling dejected because so much had happened to them, like discouragement in the air. But he said there were signs of hope as he started to talk to people. Quote, "I heard from ordinary citizens who now relished their freedom to worship. Most had learned about the faith from a babushka, an old grandmother. When the state cracked down on the church," he writes, "it ignored this group. They said, 'Let the old women sweep the floors and sell the candles and cling to the traditions until they all die off,' they reasoned. The aged hands of the babushki," he writes, "though they're the ones who rocked the cradles. Young churchgoers today often say they first learned about God in childhood through the hymns and stories grandma would whisper as they drifted off to sleep." Closer to our own country, Abraham Lincoln said this, "I remember my mother's prayers. They have always followed me. They have clung to me all my life." What a beautiful image. They have clung to me all my life. As we seek to honor our parents, may our prayers cling to them all the days of their life. And may that be a part of our royal pedigree. "Honor your father and your mother, that your days may be long in the land the Lord your God is giving you." Praise be to God. Amen.